Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
First, I want to apologize. I am sitting in a different room than I usually am, so if there's a bit of an echo to our producer, I am sorry. To our listeners, I am sorry. Fucking deal with it for once. I didn't want to set up, and there's a lot going on in my life right now that I can't wait to tell you about, and that is absolutely bananas.
I'm judging you.
Great. Yeah, I'm currently sitting on the floor in my living room. My dog's asleep behind me. I can hear my voice in my dining room, so we're just going to see how this works.
For one episode, I think we can make it work.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what's up? What's going on in your life?
Oh, man. I don't even know how to begin telling you what happened to us the other day.
Yeah?
Did you see my stories?
No. I haven't been on Instagram in like 3 days.
So the other day, it was a cloudy day and there was going to be rain. And during my lunchtime, Josh and I spent it cleaning our house like crazy. Around 4 o'clock. I was walking around my house. I was like, ugh, such a clean house. I love this house. Go us. We're killing it. And the windows were open and the rain had just come through and it was really windy. But the windows were open. It was like a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I suddenly heard something come crashing down outside.
Oh.
And I thought it was something at my neighbor's house. And it was loud. I peeked out our window and I looked down. And on the ground was the exterior wall of my home.
What?
All of the stucco.
Like this. The. What?
So I went, oh shit.
Like what could you see? Just like the framing?
What I could see on the ground was our beautiful blue exterior paint.
Okay.
I ran outside. And saw the entire stucco had fallen off of our house. And on our house was just like however they built it in 1922.
Oh my God. Pause. So, I love you. You know, you freak out.
Yes.
About sometimes things that are not as big as the stucco falling off your house.
Exactly.
What did you do?
I texted Josh and I said the outside of our house fell off.
Oh, no.
And he went, what? So I sent him a photo and he went, oh, you actually meant the truth.
You were being literal.
Yes. And then I called Mark, who is just like my Yoda for all things house stuff.
Yeah.
And he answered. And I was like, hi, I'm going to send you a picture of something wild that just happened. And you're going to have to tell me what to do. And he was like, okay. And I should have had the presence of mind to know like he thought I was going to tell him about a project that they had done for us. Like had gone horribly wrong.
Oh, okay.
And so I send it to him and he looked at it. He was like, oh, no. And Mark is the most level-headed, like, non-reacting person. And so he was like, call your insurance people and tarp it. I can't imagine your home insurance policy wouldn't cover this. And I was like, same.
Yeah.
So I immediately put in a claim and sent them photos. And the next morning they called and they were like, of course we'll cover this.
Oh, good.
Like, this is insane. Do you have a contractor coming out? Whenever you do, just let us know. And we'll make sure that the quote they give you reflects the check that we'll write. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, thank goodness.
So I'm on the computer looking up contractors. My insurance calls me back. And she says, hi. So I asked my colleague, because I don't have a lot of experience in this area. And basically, there's just no way the wind could have done that. It's an old house and it, stucco, there's a lot of wear and tear. So we can't, we can't offer you an accepted claim for like a 100-year-old house's stucco coming off. And I was like, so you're not covering this? And she went, no. And I hung
the
up on
the wind
her.
That day was like 50 miles an hour.
Thank you. And I was like, this wasn't my fault. Like, I didn't see this ever happening to us. So I was freaking out and I called my mom and dad and they came over and we had someone come out and look at it. They gave us a quote that wasn't terrible, but not terrible amount of money I wasn't planning on spending. It's still a lot of money.
Right.
So the inside of my house is gorgeous. The outside of my house looks like a skeleton in a biology classroom.
Are you going to take a second pass with the insurance and talk to them about the wind speed or anything?
So we did ask the guy who came and looked. My dad was like, could this have been because of the wind? And he said the wind definitely didn't help, but he kind of reiterated, they said like, they don't make houses like this anymore for a reason. This stucco is probably 80 years old.
Gotcha.
And because it has cracks, natural cracks, water has seeped in and just like loosened it over a long time. And we had a really, really rough winter and just came crumbling down. But then he looked around the rest of the house and was like, so it's starting to happen here as well. It's starting to happen here as well. So he's going to patch those up. But now I'm just like, are we just putting a Band-Aid over a bullet wound and we're going to have to completely re-side our house soon?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
That's terrible.
Yeah, but thank you for having the only possible reaction to have to that.
Will you send me the photo? I want to see it.
Yes, I will.
All right.
Can I do it now? Will you see it?
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's like your laugh. Just hanging out, like,
yes.
Oh my.
And our neighbor's driveway is literally right there.
Yeah. It didn't hit your air conditioner, did it?
No. Well, there were a couple of pieces like found their way in there. Luckily it's a brand new air conditioner, so like it can handle it.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh god, not your new air conditioner.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
Oh, and your new fence looks good too.
Thank you.
I guess that's been a couple of years now, hasn't it?
It's fine.
I haven't actually been to your house because we're having this panini, so. Oh, man. Michael, that's not good.
Thank you. It's okay. This is when it's good to have a husband who is like very level-headed, who hears facts, because then the guy said, don't worry about, like, it's going to be fine if it rains. Like, you don't have to tent it unless it's like non-stop torrential downpour, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So that was good to hear. So he's coming tomorrow and Monday and Tuesday to fix it.
Today we are darting left and taking a quick turn to the right, letting our house fall apart and ruining all of our technology with vomit, and also talking all about plot twists. I'm pretty excited. Are you?
Yes, because I don't have a lot of knowledge in this, because I in preparing for this, I realized I haven't read a lot of books that have a ton of plot twists.
Yeah,
but the ones that I have, I know what I like it when I read it. I know what I like when I read it.
All right, so plot twists, you love them, you hate them. Yeah. Tell me how you feel.
I'm really glad we're having this conversation, because I realized in thinking about this that when I am reading a mystery or a thriller, I like the plot twists less than when I'm reading a book that's not a thriller or a plot twist genre that has a plot twist. And what I think is why is because when I'm reading a mystery or a thriller, in the back of my head, I know, okay, a twist is coming.
Yeah.
So I'm endlessly trying to guess what it is, and that it could be any number of things. So then when it happens, regardless of if I'm surprised or not, I'm less surprised generally because I knew a twist at all was happening. So when I read books that are like literary fiction or even like comedy or rom-coms where I'm not remotely in the mindset of like there might be a twist happening here and the twist comes, when it's good, I'm so shocked and it becomes one of my favorite books. I mean, I don't want to say anything that might be your pick, but we've talked about A Million Reasons Why, Less, like books like that where like at no point was I expecting to be like specifically shocked by something in those books that then changed my reading of it. And those have lasted with me a lot longer than like mystery or thriller books that have twists, because like that is ingrained in the genre. Like if a mystery or thriller doesn't have a twist, then it's not a mystery or thriller. So I think it totally depends on the way it's done and the kind of book I'm reading.
Yeah, I think that absolutely makes sense. A Million Reasons Why is probably my favorite book with a plot twist that I've read like in the last year or so.
Yeah.
I didn't have it as one of my books today just because we talked about it and interviewed Jessica, but I do have another one of her books.
I was going to say she's the master at that.
She's so good at it.
Yeah.
I have like this love-hate thing with plot twists. Like sometimes I adore them. I didn't see them coming and I gasp out loud and I'm like, oh yes, like this makes so much sense. I love how it came together. And like usually in that case, like the plot twist was a surprise, or it changed my perspective of the story, or it gave me something else to kind of think about or see a character a different way. And when I look back, usually there were like clues pointing to it,
right,
that I didn't pick up on. Other times, I'm like, this is ridiculous, and now I'm mad. If you couldn't figure out how to resolve your plot, you should have kept thinking.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, it came without warning or abruptly changed the plot or the nature of the story. Generally, it just makes me feel like, what is going on here? And can I have a refund on my time because you couldn't think of how to get out of your book situation?
That's exactly how I feel. Like, yeah. When it feels like it's shock value and but not valuing the story, I'm just like, what was the point of that? Because yeah, it shocked me, but it was empty. And my favorite twists are ones that ultimately don't feel like twists because it feels like, of course, this had to happen.
Yeah.
But the way that it was written was intentionally misleading me. And then I go back and reread it and I'm like, the clues were there the whole time.
Yeah. I think it's more of almost like more of a revelation than a twist.
Like a reveal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you guess the plot twist, does that not bother you? Does it make you mad or disappointed? It doesn't impact you at all?
I don't love guessing it. And I'm also very bad at guessing twists. Yeah. So it's not usually a problem. But I don't love that feeling. Like I'm not someone who needs to have known or I'm not someone who needs to other people to know that I knew. Like I like being surprised. And there was like even in this is not a book, but even in the Gilmore Girls revival, I mean, even when the show was on, the creators had said they always knew what the last four words of the show was going to be.
Yeah.
And then they stopped running the show. So then they never got to reveal that. And then in the finale or in the revival, they said they were gonna do it. And we were watching it. We just binged the entire thing, and then it was about to happen. And Rory said, "Mom," and Lorelai went, "Yeah." And I knew in my heart that she was about to say, "I'm pregnant." And I just went, "No way." And Josh went, "What?" And then she said, "I'm pregnant." I don't love figuring it out, but I like figuring it out at the same time as it's happening.
Yeah.
Is really fun and does something really weird to my body where I just like I need some time to like it's like get over it, like it feels like a shock to my system.
I love that. I hate when I guess.
Yes.
I like the surprise. I don't mind knowing that the book has a twist or that there's a twist coming,
right?
But if I guess it, especially, and I think the reason I feel that way is because I am very bad at guessing it.
Sure.
So if I nail it, I'm mad because I'm the worst at it. You get to the plot twist in your book. I'm very curious about this because you are very good at staying with a book and like savoring it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the twist, are you a person who has to read to the end or can you continue to be normal?
I love this question because like it's making me realize one of my picks and two of my favorites always of all time are like the very last thing in the book. So I've just finished it and then the twist happens, which is like unsettling. But one time, let's go to Jessica Strasser, like with A Million Reasons Why,
mm-hmm.
when that twist happened, the second twist happened, there was no way that I was going to not finish that book right then. Yeah. Because it changed my experience reading it.
Yeah.
So I think it totally depends on the kind of twist and when it happens. Because, like, even less, you don't realize it's a twist. Like,
yeah.
It's the very last, like, three paragraphs, and you're like, oh my God, this is so sweet.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like,
I do, yeah.
I think that it depends on how much of the book is left and what it's done for the story. Because there's this book called 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. We read it for book club. It's one of Josh's favorite books. It wasn't for me. I was very confused the whole time. And it was one of those situations where, like, this is a mystery. Any number of these people could do it. And I'm so confused. I'm too confused that the twist is not going to land because, like, I'm just like, oh my God, just tell me who did it.
Yeah.
And that was a case where we finally found out. I wasn't that surprised, not because I guessed it, but because anyone could have done it. And it was kind of like pulling teeth to get me to finish that one.
That's interesting. Like, it does not matter where in the book it happens. I mean, I feel like the plot twist could be on page 25. I now have to know how the rest falls out. If it involves reading until 3 a.m. and being a zombie the next day, that is no problem. I will forego sleep to get all the details. Yeah. I'm all in. Let's do it. Unless I've already guessed. If I have guessed, then I'm mad. And it will take me a week to read the last 50 pages or whatever it is. And I'll have to send you like 8 text messages about how I'm mad at my book.
Do you have one specifically, like, as an example? Do you remember a time when you guessed a, and if you don't, that's fine. But do you have one where you're like, oh God, is it going to be this? And then it was.
I can't think of one right now where I guessed it, but I will tell you, and we've discussed this before, Red at the Bone.
That was actually almost one of my picks today as an example of, like, kind of a twist.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a twist.
Yeah.
But when that is revealed, I think I texted you, like, the whole rest of the book as I finished it. I think I sent you angry text messages. And I prefaced every one of them with, you told me not to read this one first.
That one's interesting. I think that we've, and I don't know, I'm not an expert on this writing technique, but I feel like we've gotten away from only doing on-the-nose plot twist reveals, and we are leaning into these, like, really subtle literary reveals where it's, like, never said exactly, but you get enough of the information to know, like, oh my God, is this about 9/11? Like, in Red at the Bone? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Which makes it, like, sometimes too subtle, and I would like to something concrete to tell me, like, is this what she's saying?
Yeah.
And sometimes it makes it more impactful because it makes it feel real.
Should we jump in? What's your first pick?
My first pick is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. Have you read Rebecca?
I have, but it has been like more than 15 years.
I'm sure, yeah. And I just read it, I think, not even 2 years ago for the first time. And it's classic gothic novel. I think it was written in like 1937 or 38.
Yeah.
And it follows the main character who's nameless. She and this American woman who she's working as a companion for are in Monte Carlo, where she meets Max. I think his name's like Maxime de Winter or something. And he is a widower in his early 40s. The main character and Max, over the next like 2 weeks, are like kind of courting. It's so subtle. Everything about this book is all about subtext.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where he proposes to her kind of to her surprise. And she also surprisingly accepts. And after their wedding and honeymoon in Monte Carlo, I believe, they then go to his estate, which is a beautiful property named Manderley. And the minute they get there, Max seems like a different person. And the main character can't help but feel like his dead wife is kind of everywhere and that he can't get over her. And this is sort of made worse by the really sinister housekeeper, Mrs. Danvers, who clearly doesn't like the main character, who is really manipulative and emotionally and psychologically abusive to her. She makes her feel like Rebecca did everything perfect. Rebecca's his dead ex-wife.
Yeah.
And in an effort to sort of regain the marriage that she thought she was in, through Mrs. Danvers' suggestion, she restarts this costume ball that Rebecca had done, that everyone loved. And Mrs. Danvers suggests she wears this dress that is a replica of a dress that's someone's wearing in a portrait in the house, and convinces her that Max will love it. And she's like super excited. She looks so beautiful and is really feeling herself because she's a very shy main character.
Mm-hmm.
And when she enters, Max is very angry and like demands that she goes and changes. And is later revealed then that Mrs. Danvers just hates her and is still like deeply obsessed with Rebecca and tries to convince the main character to commit suicide like right then.
Oh.
And she's about to, like she's at the window about to, and they're interrupted by a shipwreck that then reveals more information about how Rebecca died and Max's participation or not in it.
Mm.
So that's all I want to say about the plot, because yeah. then the last third is all about subtext, all about atmosphere. And yeah. then the very last, I'd say three pages, you're just like reading it frantically to be like, what is this leading to? Like, how yes. is this the end of the book? And then the last like four sentences, I have goosebumps running down my back because it was just like made my stomach hurt in the best way.
Uh-huh.
And it's all I can think about. And it was unreal. And it's again, like, we don't write books like this anymore. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. that as a good or bad thing. It's just that we don't. Like, it was, nothing was on the nose. It was all atmosphere and all about what wasn't being said. And for a classic twist that is not beating you over the head with it, I could not recommend Rebecca Moore. And also, for people who are like easily afraid and don't like scary books, you could absolutely read this, because
yeah.
it's not like a horror story. It's not a classic thriller in that way. It's truly just the atmosphere around it makes it a tiny bit spooky.
Yeah, this, I mean, it's been a while, but one of the things I remember about it is that it's the same. When you get to like the last few pages, it's like, you got to yes. know what happens. And then I remember just being like, oh.
Yes.
And then going back like to like that last third you said and just being yeah. like, wait, hold up.
Exactly. Like, what did this mean?
And going back and looking at all of those like subtleties that I missed. Like,
yes.
Oh.
It's like so subtle. It's like,
it's really good.
It's like Jane Austen in that way where it's yeah. like, you're just a better reader after you read it, because you have to read those kind of books really closely
mm-hmm.
because society and culture has changed so much that what is honest now, you would have never said back then. So you have to suss out what people mean with what they are saying.
Yes.
Oh, I love that book.
I love that book. I'm going to have to go back and reread it now.
I would love to get your thoughts on it again.
Yeah, because it's been a hot minute. But
we were like cleaning out our house, and we have all of these old like classic books that we just bought at Half Price Books forever ago.
Yeah.
And I was going through them, and one of them is a copy of Rebecca from the year it was published. Like, we have an original copy of Rebecca.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
And I for book club didn't know we had it, and I bought like a copy from like Kroger, like those like tiny versions.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have a copy somewhere, because I know it was like a signed reading at some point in my life. I'll have to dig it up.
Yeah. What that about you? What's your first pick?
My first pick, we know her, we love her, Jessica Strasser.
She just came out with a new book.
She did. It came out 3 days ago. And that one is called The Next Thing You Know, which I ordered it this morning. I can't wait to read it. But my first pick is Jessica Strasser's Almost Missed You. Okay, so quick plot summary. Violet and Finn were that quote-unquote meant-to-be couple. They ended up together by this complete fluke of her wearing this hand-me-down t-shirt from a summer camp she'd attended in middle school and had been closed for years and years and years. And he walks past her on the beach and was like, did you go there? Which, I mean, by the way, I love I love the setup. I mean, just like the cutest, you know, meet cute on earth. 3 years into their marriage, they've got a little boy, and they go on their first family vacation. And the book opens up and she's sitting on the beach and she's just thinking about like how great life is. No one is more surprised than she is when she goes back to their room and her husband and their child are gone. No note, no nothing, just gone. So, it's like, do you even know the person you're married to?
Right. She's so good at that.
It's wild. And I mean, like I said, the description sounds like maybe it's going to be a thriller, but it's not. It just makes you ask all these questions. Like, can you really ever know your spouse fully? Do people always have secrets? So there's like one big twist and two smaller twists. And after I read it, I was talking about it on Instagram and Jessica DM'd me and she was like, hey, you know, thanks for talking about my book or whatever. And then because I'm a lunatic, I had to then detail for her.
Yes.
Like, what is wrong with me?
She
was very kind. I had to detail for her all of the spots in which I audibly gasp and how I felt about them.
Yes.
I mean, if I can embarrass myself, I will. That is apparently my role in life.
But like goals as an author.
Right. That's true.
Yes.
That is true. It's a very engaging book. I had a lot of empathy. There's sort of four main characters.
Yeah.
And they're all, I'm going to describe it as carrying a burden.
Yes. Oh, that's a really good way to put it, Jill.
And as the twists are revealed, all of a sudden, the picture comes into focus. And then it's like, you have to know what happens. And I adore Jessica. I adore this book.
I loved this book, and I loved because it's kind of everything you're saying. It's like quietly not about what you think it's about to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't a traditional thriller. I don't even know if she would say that it's a thriller. And the way that it opens is really internal, very thoughtful, because it does just open with her on the beach.
Yeah.
And then I love that we're talking about this one because it's a complete contrast to what I just read, which was like the twist. It was the very end. Mm-hmm. And in Almost Missed You, the initial twist is the very end of the first chapter. And you're just like, what? What? Like, where are they? And why did they go? And I don't know. I'm ready for Jessica Strasser's career to like catapult her to like Jodi Picoult level fame because her books are so readable, so literary, and I really like fully believe that one of them will be adapted into something.
I agree, and I can't believe that none of her books have popped up on any of the big book lists. You know, the Oprah Reese.
I know.
Situation.
Particularly Almost Missed You, because it was just so good. I mean, like, that makes it sound like any of her work isn't, but it was just like, it felt like a culmination of what she'd been working toward. Mm-hmm. And I think reading her stuff is fun to do back to back to back, because it's like, I find myself like not wanting to leave her writing style ever. I love this
pattern. Yes. A lot of times I don't care for reading the same author back to back. And when I do it, it is accidental. Yes. But as we've discussed many previous times.
Shout out to Taylor Jenkins Reid.
And also Kylie Reid, who's definitely a different person. I forgot what I was going to say.
You don't love doing that.
I don't love doing that. But when we were working on Author Spirals, I read two or three of her books, like one right after another, because I had liked A Million Reasons Why so much. Yeah. And I liked the next two also. Right. Something about them was like different enough that I didn't feel, the tone didn't feel the same.
I think I know what you mean, because there's a real comfort in reading her stuff because it takes pretty serious subjects and makes them completely digestible, mm-hmm. and without sugarcoating any of these situations or feeling like they're being exploitative.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool.
What's your next pick?
Well, like I said, I don't have a ton in this category. Like, I really haven't read a lot. But another one is one that I've talked about a little bit on this podcast, and I know you've read it, and it's The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead.
Yes.
And
I want everyone to read this book.
Honestly, this is one of the best books I have ever read. The heart of the story is that it takes place in a detention center in Jim Crow South.
Yeah.
A boy is in there for a crime he did not commit. And there is an escape plan happening where he and another boy are trying to get out. And it fluctuates between that happening and the future where he has escaped. So the whole time you're reading it, you think kind of light. Like, you're like, oh, well, this is all terrible, but I know he gets out. And then something happens that is hardly a twist. It is more like just a really subtle reveal.
Okay.
As to the truth, mm-hmm. which is, I don't want to say.
Yeah, don't say.
Do you know what
it.
I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking okay. about.
And it's the kind of twist where it's a little bit of both, where like, it didn't come out and say it, but I had to finish it. The minute it happened,
yeah. I was the same. Like,
what? And it instantly changed the reading that I had just done, which was like almost the whole book. Because it's not the very end, but it's very close to the end where it happens. And you like find yourself going back and reading specifically the future mm-hmm. passages and being like, what did this do with my perspective? And what did you about perspective that it completely fooled me? And I don't think Colson Whitehead was trying to fool me. He mm-hmm. was just telling a story. And this was the, you know what I mean? Like,
I think this is like in the all-star category of plot twists. A lot of times,
I totally agree.
When I recommend books, I'm like, oh, this is a good book for you if you like this or that or the other. Nickel Boys is a book that I'm just like, I'm an evangelist. I want everyone to read this book. I'm shoving it on people. And, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of book they're looking for.
Absolutely, yes.
If this book is within arm's reach and I have it at my house,
shoving it into people's hands.
Yeah, I'll be like, hey, so I put the two books you asked about in this bag, but also another book that you have to read it.
Yeah, and I don't know a ton of people who have read it. I know you've read it. I know Andrea's read it. Hi, Andrea. I love you. And it won the Pulitzer, but I'm like desperate for more people to read it because you can't talk about it with people who haven't.
Yes, because you can't say anything.
Anything. Like, it's like the purpose of talking about it is to discuss how masterfully he pulled it off.
Yes.
And something I've said before about Colson Whitehead is that I never feel like I'm supposed to have a singular way of reading his work. He feels very removed from the experience of reading it. And what I mean by that is that like certain stories are a certain emotion or are expecting you to have a certain emotional response. Nickel Boys, and I've read Harlem Shuffle too. He almost writes his books kind of like nonfiction, where it just feels like these things are happening.
Yeah.
And your reaction is going to be based off of how much of an empathetic person you are. Because these are terrible things that are happening, but I'm not going to remind you that they're terrible. You better be a good enough person to know that they're terrible. And that way I'm just like, fuck, he's so good. The restraint he has in his writing is unparalleled. So my point being that like there are a ton of reasons why. There are a million reasons why you should read this book. If you like historical fiction, if you like literary fiction, if you're looking for a twist, like there are endless reasons why you would love this.
The next one I read is called The Flat Share by Beth O'Leary. And I want to preface everything I have to say about it by saying that my feelings might be because this book was very, very much not what I was expecting.
Okay.
So the main characters, Tiff and Leon, share an apartment, but they've never met. So it was like after this really bad breakup, and Tiff Moore needed a place to live because she'd been living with her boyfriend.
Okay.
She's got to find a place right away. She needs it to be cheap. But the apartments in her budget are just like, one of them is like mold on the wall. And, you know, she is desperate. So she answers this ad for a flat share. And Leon, who is a night shift worker, will take the apartment during the day. And she can have it on nights and weekends. He'll only ever be there while she's at the office. And then his plan is to stay at his girlfriend's on the weekend. So she jumps at this because it's affordable and nicely located in central London and, you know, all that. So they start writing these post-it notes for each other, and they start off, you know, like about when garbage day is or like leftovers in the fridge. And then they progress and they're getting to know each other. And it's one of my favorite aspects of this. I'm about to tell you I did not like this book, but that aspect of the book was really lovely.
Yeah.
And I loved this idea of getting to know someone through post-it notes.
It's sweet.
So I picked this up and I thought the premise sounded fun. I was looking for a light read. I assumed, because the tagline on the front said, "Can the one be someone you've never met?" I instantly knew they're eventually going to meet and fall in love and live happily ever after, which was great. It was a busy week and I just wanted light, fun read. It did not indicate that it was going to be spicy at all, which we know I can't handle.
Oh.
So I was like, great, great, great. So and that definitely happens. Like the whole setup, the first half of this book. And by the way, this book is long. The first half of this book is like that.
Okay.
And then about halfway through, it turns out that Tiff's boyfriend is a stalker. And he was abusive to her in her relationship. And he's decided to get her back, and he starts showing up everywhere she goes. He tries to isolate her from other people, and I am ruining this book for everyone. It climaxes with him coming not once, but twice to her apartment and finally getting violent.
Oh my God.
This plot twist was like introducing an entirely new book.
It sounds like two different books.
Comes halfway through the book. There's still a whole second. I want to be like, I am sorry. You wrote two books. And I know that domestic violence, partner violence, it's very common. We should definitely normalize talking about it.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes you can never know what's going on in another person's life. And I assume that's why there were no indications of this.
Yeah.
Leading up to it, it just turned up. It felt like a completely different book. I didn't like it very much. It might/probably is an expectations thing. And if I hadn't gone into it thinking I was reading one thing that turned out to be something else, maybe it would have been okay. I don't know. I'm hoping maybe one of our listeners has read this book. And can share another perspective, because I was just, to put it, here's how I'll describe it. I ended up listening to the last 3 hours of it on an airplane. It was the only book I had downloaded, and it's literally the only reason I finished it is because I was trapped with no other media.
What a rave review. I think it's fair to say it's like a little bit expectations, but also like, not just expectations, but also like, it failed to be the book that you expected, but that you were also reading. Like you were reading, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You're like, okay, yeah, this is what I want. And I'm reading it and I'm liking that. And then it failed to do that anymore. And this is so interesting. It's funny. It's funny when different media can pull that off, because this is maybe a like, I don't know if anyone's seen this, but there's a movie that came out when I was like 14 called Red Eye with Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy. And the trailers for it were genius because the first like 30, 40 seconds, it looks like it's going to be a rom-com where these two people have like a meet cute in an airport. Mm-hmm. And then they're sitting by each other on the airplane. And then she just asks like, so what do you do for work? And then it like zooms in on his face. And then you could tell like, oh, this is something else. And it becomes a thriller. And so it just was like genius reversal of our expectations. And as a movie, it was able to pull that off. And it told me that up front. I think it's a lot harder to do that with books because you're so immersed into it that you're getting all of these details. And when the details start to change and alter and become violent, that is insane.
Well, and it's one of those things where, you know, usually before the two characters come together, there's some kind of large scale misunderstanding. Right. You know, Mark and I joke while I'm watching my Hallmark movies, Mark will be like, oh, there's 20 minutes left. It's time for the misunderstanding. So when we got to that halfway point and you're kind of like, how is there half the book left? And then the boyfriend shows up at the apartment the first time, you're like, oh, the boyfriend's going to be, the ex-boyfriend's going to be the misunderstanding. But then it goes places that you're like, what? And then I have to tell you, the stupidest thing that happens in this book that just like, I was just like, absolutely not. There is no, this is so unbelievable. We already know he's a stalker. We already know he routinely gaslights her. We already know he tries to isolate her from other people. Like, we know all of these things. She has spent all of her encounters with him when he's stalking her, just like, no, 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 and getting away from him. She works in publishing, so she's at this book launch event, and he storms the stage when the author is speaking, the ex-boyfriend does, and proposes to her. And it becomes this viral video on the internet. And Leon sees the video and is like, oh, our relationship is over. They're getting married. And I'm like, that is your response to my girlfriend's abusive ex-boyfriend rushed the stage at a live performance and proposed to her.
Seriously, I would be like reaching out.
Right, like, that's just, it wasn't even I'm so mad.
I really do love how like you spiral from trying to be like, I, you know, like probably my expectations. And then like 10 minutes later, it's like, I fucking hated this book. I did everything poorly. Like, I am right. I am validated. Thank you.
I loved the first half of the book and I just wanted to love it all.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
It is. Do you have another one?
I do have one more. This is a book that I read a couple years ago, and I initially thought it was okay. I thought it was good. And then I read this author's other work with you, actually, and I thought that was okay, which made me realize, like, I actually really liked this one. And it's Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng, which is her debut novel. And then you and I read Little Fires Everywhere. And Little Fires Everywhere is the bigger name book. Like, that's the one that got all the accolade, or I guess just, like, the popularity. And that had a lot to do with Reese Witherspoon. So if you liked that, I would suggest going back and reading Everything I Never Told You.
I'm kicking myself now because when we talked about Little Fires Everywhere, you mentioned this book. And I wanted to go back and read it then and completely forgot. So now I'm writing it down.
Sure. Good. Well, and we know how much I hate doing synopses, so I'm just going to read Goodreads.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Lydia is dead, but they don't know this yet. So begins the exquisite novel about a Chinese-American family living in 1970s small-town Ohio. Lydia is the favorite child of Marilyn and James Lee, and her parents are determined that she will fulfill the dreams that they were unable to pursue. But when Lydia's body is found in the local lake, the delicate balancing act that has been keeping the Lee family together is destroyed, tumbling them into chaos. So that's a very cagey synopsis.
Yeah, but I'm hooked. I'm hooked already.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And she does really well just stories about family that then happens to have a twist.
Yeah.
And this is a really, really, really sad story that, like, the twist comes in two forms. And one is what was clearly a misunderstanding, and the other was something that could have been prevented. And both of which probably would have saved Lydia's life. And it's remarkable what it does with regard to perspective, because it's through a couple of different characters' perspectives and offers kind of like equality in that, because a lot of people in this book make mistakes that would like destroy relationships, but life is a lot more complicated than that. And our feelings for one another are more complicated than one person's mistake. Because it's easy to make a villain of, say, Lydia's father. Like, he does some really shitty things. And it's been a couple of years, and I remember being like, this guy is not a good dad. But then I'm like, oh, I have never really suffered the same way that a lot of people have suffered, especially like people who come to this country expecting what we promise them, and then we make their lives miserable. So I think that where Little Fires Everywhere expanded in terms of world building, there's a lot going on in Little Fires Everywhere. And what I was disappointed in it with was just how unrealistic a lot of the situations were. That is removed from Everything I Never Told You. And it feels like such a more focused story about a family going through something unimaginable. And it's something that I also don't think, I don't really think about the twist when I think about that book. I think about how the twist exists, and then I'm learning about these people's relationships and families and experiences before that thing happened. And the character who's dead from the beginning is on every page very alive. And it's a book that I would recommend to people who are trying to get into the genre, who are hesitant about heavy topics, because it is heavy, but also oddly readable, the same way that, did you ever read An American Marriage?
No, it's not.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, I've downloaded it. I want to listen to it.
Yeah, I'm rubbing off on you.
I know.
But it has the same feeling of like, how could you say this is compulsory? But it is. You just like can't put it down. Yeah, so I really love this book. And I like that I give myself some space to be... I just don't think any of us should say... Unless we loved a book, if you felt just okay about a book... Don't react immediately, because you're obviously still processing.
Yeah.
And I read this book like 3 years ago, and every time I see the cover pop up in the world I live in, which is like books everywhere, I'm always like, gosh, that was a really good book. And if you had asked me like the minute I finished, I would have been like, it's okay.
It's all right. Yeah. I love that.
I think you would really like it.
Yeah. I have made a short to-do list for myself. Perfect. after this episode, and that is on it. My last one is The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. And this has been read by a lot of people because it is a Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, I see the cover now in my head.
Book pick. Yeah, the cover is really nice. So married couple, Hannah and Owen. And before Owen disappears, he smuggles a note to his wife of 1 year, and all the note says is protect her. And despite, like, she's so confused, but she knows exactly who the note refers to. It's Owen's 16-year-old daughter, Bailey. Bailey lost her mother tragically as a child. She was, I think, 6 or 7 years old. And Bailey also wants absolutely nothing to do with her new stepmom.
Of course.
And she keeps trying to call him and he's not answering. Then the FBI arrests his boss. There's a U.S. Marshal and federal agents at her home unannounced. And she very quickly realizes that her husband is not who he said he was. She also figures out that Bailey likely has the key to figuring out Owen's true identity and why he has disappeared. So they set out together to discover the truth, but as they start putting together the pieces, it also becomes really clear that they're building a new future. And, you know, that's definitely not something that they intended or anticipated. And I really enjoyed this book. Mm. Hannah is in this terrible position. You know, I think she had known her husband for like a year, and then they'd been married for a year. They got married much later in her life. It's her first marriage. She has this stepdaughter. She's never been a parent.
Teen stepdaughter.
Much less parented a teen.
Right.
And she feels like all of her overtures to her stepdaughter are just wrong. It'll describe several of them in the book. And I'm like, oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Oh, no.
But she has such good intentions.
Of course.
You know, it's literally like she's never parented a teenager. And now she has one.
Of course.
And so she's trying so hard. And it's like, but everything she tries is just no.
Fail after fail after fail.
Right. And then you also feel for this teen who's like, she's lost her mom. She and her dad have been living together alone for 10 years. Her father never talks about her mother. She has no extended family. Mm. And then all of a sudden, it's like, here's your stepmom.
Bye.
I just have so much compassion for both of them and empathy. And I think it's because as they move through piecing this together, they begin to have so much empathy and compassion for one another. Mm. And they realize that, you know, regardless of what has happened between them, they both loved Owen.
Wow.
And that he was a person, you know, they loved him, he loved them. And regardless, like, you know, they're going to work together to fill this out. So, and they begin to support one another in their anger, in their grief. And eventually, I don't think this will spoil anything for you, but Bailey does have the pieces they need to put this together and figure out what happened. But it involves them traveling to Texas and revisiting memories from when she was 5 and 6 years old. The twist was really good. I didn't guess it, but it was an amazing fit to the story. And it was definitely one where once we figured out what was going on, I absolutely had to know how it ended. So it was a stay up late and finish it kind of book.
See, I love these picks that we've brought because, like, it illustrates our point that, like, twists exist outside of the mystery thriller genre, and they exist in books that are complicated.
Yeah.
That ultimately, like, you're talking about so much more than the twist. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
The twist isn't the point of the book.
Exactly. Which is so infuriating when that happens.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that because I loved all of Reese Witherspoon's book club picks. And it's hard because the ones that I've loved, I'm just like, God, could Infinite Country have been a better book? Absolutely not. It's a perfect book.
Yes.
But then the other ones I've read of hers, I'm like, it was all right.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear this because I know a lot of people have read this one, but literally nobody's told me what it's about. Is this being made into anything? I feel like I'm seeing the cover a lot lately.
It would make an amazing movie or adaptation of some kind. So it would not surprise me at all. It was the way it's formatted could absolutely translate.
Adapt. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any of these could, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Except the one I hated.
Except the one you hated.
It's two books and two movies.
Yeah. We'll do an anthology series. Cool. This was so fun. Because when I pick books, I'm a pretty habitual reader, which I hate. Like, no matter what the genre is, I find myself liking within those genres a specific kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to be surprised by books and surprised when you like one for a reason that you didn't expect. Listeners, let us know your plot twists of the day as you're listening to this. And if you have any books that have amazing twists to them, please let us know. Obviously, I'm adding to my TBR pile. Email us at info@bookapod.com. Hang out with us on social. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bookapod. Visit our website at bookapod.com for more bookish content. And so many books that we talk about are at our bookshop affiliate link. So go check that out at bookshop.org/shop/bookapod.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.